folks, I'm Katie Gannaway, the host of this show, Arts Underground. Today we are talking with someone who is resurrecting one medium of entertainment so many people are collecting nowadays, the video cassette tape. Not only does this person have their own shop dedicated to that medium in downtown Huntsville, they are bringing movie nights to the community at Shenanigans Comedy Theater, as well as a chance to learn how to write sketch comedy. It is my pleasure to introduce our guest today, KB Singer. Hi, KB.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm doing well.
Tell me where you grew up.
I grew up in the high desert area of Southern California, about an hour north of Los Angeles, called the Antelope Valley. Basically, in a lot of movies, if you see Texas or the desert at all, they probably filmed it in that area.
Okay.
So cool. Hollywood adjacent, but certainly not.
Did you see any films get made or any scenes?
I used to do background work on more TV than movie stuff, but I don't think I ever stumbled upon any film sets. But I mean, I've certainly been on set for certain things.
Please talk about that work, because I had no clue.
Oh, yeah. Around the early aughts-ish, so in my 20s, I was local enough to L.A. that you could go sign up for this casting company, mm-hmm. and then you would, this was pre-internet. The internet existed, but it wasn't booming. It was still, yeah, this was a phone-based system. But you'd call a hotline, and they'd say, okay, we're looking for a hospital of visitors for ER. Mm-hmm. And they'd give a listing of like what kind of, it might just say 18 to 35. So you just call and they'd say, okay, show up for the day. So I did ER, I did the show Angel, I did Firefly.
When you say
Firefly.
You did, you
I'm
were on
them.
It?
Yeah.
That is so cool.
For the okay. most, in most cases, I might just be an elbow or a person passing by. But
an elbow?
I think there's an episode of The West Wing where I'm definitely an elbow. But I had a couple of gigs where you can, like, I could tell my grandma, I'm going to be on TV, and she would see me. It's a great, I always recommend for anyone who's interested in film or television at all, if you live close, even like out here, if you're close enough to Atlanta to pop over, because they do the same stuff over there. But anyway, yeah, it was really cool to go and see a production of that caliber.
Oh, yeah.
Especially ER at the time had been on for several seasons, so that show and The West Wing were so like just well-oiled machines. They would just knock through it so quickly. And he's like, all these people are just like doing all this. And I don't know. It wasn't really a gateway because I was already interested in filmmaking at that time. And screen.
What was your foray into filmmaking?
I guess the root of it is, I guess there's two parts to this. One is when I was, for the longest time, I thought I was 11 when this happened. And I was doing the math and I was like, no, I guess I was like more like 13. I don't know what year it was. Middle school-ish age, my aunt took me to Universal Studios.
I love Universal Studios. Yeah, so, I geek out over Universal.
And this is when they had a three-hour backlot tour. This is the Hollywood version. I mean, this is the one in California. It was this long, let's tell you how the movies are made.
Yep.
And then we also went to a taping of the show Growing Pains at the time. So
okay.
I got to see a real-time taping of a show. Yeah. I got to go to Universal Studios and see how they do all this movie magic. And I was just kind of like, it clicked. I was like, oh, this is how they do it. And I always loved movies and I always loved TV growing up. In retrospect, knowing now that I'm on the autism spectrum, I was like, I realized I was plugging into kind of like, that was my connection to the world in a way.
Yeah.
So in reverse engineering that, I was like, oh, that's why. I was kind of like, how do you do this? How do you person? Mm-hmm. And then it was like giving me a structure to all that. So that was one leg of it. And then when I was 18, I had moved away from my hometown for a couple months. And then when I came back, they were like, you'll never believe, they came in to film this independent movie in our local coffee house. And I was like, what? Ooh. And it was just right. This was this 96, 97. So the indie movie fever as a concept was kind of hot at the time. Everybody was like.
Like kids or.
Yeah.
Like
everyone was realizing, mm-hmm. I don't need to be Steven Spielberg to make a movie. Mm-hmm. I could have a camera and I can just go do it. So I had this group of friends. They were all taking a screenwriting class that I was not in. And I was like, what is this thing that you're doing? And that was my gateway into screenwriting, which I learned how screenplays are written. And then I ultimately took that same class a couple of times, started writing my own work. And then, so that was kind of the gateway into that. And then eventually I would start making my own films and doing all that. So
how'd you get to Huntsville?
It's been not quite 2 years ago. It was a combination of things. It was like California is getting very expensive. It's also on fire a lot of the time.
That's a really good reason to move out.
It's always burning. My partner's family is out this way. So we were, you know, post-COVID, I think like everybody kind of crunching the numbers and thinking, what makes sense? And so we came out here for a visit and we were like, let's just make the jump and try it and go from the high desert to the sweaty, humid, swampy south. And here I am.
You talked a little bit about your background in sketch. Mm-hmm. So how did you get connected with Shenanigans Comedy Theater?
Last summer, they teamed up with the Alabama Film Co-op.
Okay.
To do one of those like 72-hour weekend film competitions, which are where you get a bunch of people in a room and you say, here's three prompts. Spaghetti, someone's got to say, it's on fire, and a genre. Or something like, they'll give you like some mix of prompts. Mm-hmm. And then you have 72 hours to make a short film. Mm-hmm. And so they were doing that at Shenanigans. That was my first, I think it was the first time I ended up over there. I had certainly seen either new people who were going there for stuff or had seen different things. But I think that was, I'm trying to make sure I'm not a liar. but that's, I definitely participated in that event. Mm-hmm. And on the night that they screened the films, I approached Kim and Jessica there and I was like, do you have any interest in doing a screenwriting class? Mm-hmm. And they were like, well, we actually want to start a sketch program. Will that work? And I was like, it's the same thing. It's just shorter form. So and then it kind of just took off from there.
I went to both that sketchy shows and they were so amazing. Can you talk about the structure of that and like the leading up to it? What's the process of getting these people acquainted with sketch writing versus improv? Because I know a lot of improvers have been in those shows.
So we started with a formal class structure for the first wave. And actually what's interesting is the first sketch show actually had like a 6-month buildup to it because we ran like a sketch 1, 2, and 3 just to kind of pull in all the people who are interested to give a basis to it. So what's interesting is that kind of wave of sketch writers had time to develop stuff in the class, and then we had some workshops, and then but then the second wave, it was a lot more condensed, which was it was interesting going from one where you kind of, you know, for me coming from a filmmaking background, it's like, okay, we had some pre-production time and we could look at this and shape the show and see what we were doing. And then the second round, I was like, we're moving fast, but it was a good exercise. But basically, you know, you conceptually come up with a script. You know, there's certain beats to sketch that make it work correctly. It's storytelling, right? It's just beginning, middle, and end. The interesting thing about sketch is that you do have to kind of invert one of the primary things about storytelling, which is normally you would say show, don't tell. And in this case, you really just want to tell, I'm so glad, honey, we're at the supermarket and it's noon on a Friday, like Friday after Thanksgiving, whatever. Right. Like you have to get in quickly and establish and then do whatever the lead up is. So it's a little more on the nose, but that's what makes it funny. So we write the sketches and then we cast them the first time through. Kind of was like whoever showed up got in. But the second time we had, I want to say at least a dozen people who volunteered their time to be in the sketches. I also come from a community theater background where I'm used to doing Shakespeare shows where it was like 4 hours a week, 4 days. Like it's like, and we're like, we have 4 rehearsals over the next 4 weeks. So we got to get it. Granted, we're not doing Shakespeare, but.
But that's still a short amount of time.
It is. Well, although I think when you lay it next to something like Saturday Night Live.
Yeah. Oh,
where they're starting on a
where they have
Monday
no time.
And then they're cranking through it and doing the next. So I was like, well, we have more time than they do. Mm-hmm, so, but then we rehearse and then we go into, you know, our tech rehearsal is really just the Monday, Tuesday of the week of the show. Mm-hmm. And then we pull it together and it's worked twice now. And we're going to do a third one in September. And what is interesting to me is, even by the Monday of the show, there's still things that I'm like, I'm not sure about. I'm like, well, we're missing a piece for this or something's not quite landing here. Mm-hmm. And then on Tuesday, something will just roll into place. And then you're like, oh, that's what was missing. And sometimes this last show there, I forget what it was, but there was something like on the Friday show that like something hadn't been landing, but we had kind of evened it out. And I know sometimes it's just the presence of the audience helps a performer just bring whatever that is. But it's just to see all those pieces, whether it's stage or sketch or film, my favorite part of the process is giving, you know, that script to actors and then seeing which things that they think are the most important and what they bring to it and how they present it.
It sounds possibly stressful. Do you have stress management tips for anybody who wants to get into this kind of thing?
I think for me, the most stressful part like this last time, because there were so many people involved and it was kind of getting everyone lined up, that was kind of stressing me out a little bit. But you kind of just, in the case like this, again, we're doing it. It's a community project. Yeah. So it's kind of just sitting back and going, you know what? It is whatever's going to happen is going to happen. And I always, what I often tell everybody is, you know what? It's okay if someone flubs a line and because a lot of them are improvisers, they're very good at kind of stepping in and meeting, right. And maybe feeding a line going, yes, they should go and do that thing.
Yeah.
That has happened on stage. And just letting them handle it, because what am I going to do from the audience as a director? Jump up and run up there and say, actually, everyone, the scenario here is this. So I think just leaning back and letting them take that on. So I guess the short answer is don't take it so seriously.
Mm-hmm. Of all the sketches, is there one that is very memorable to you that has energized you?
I really liked, this is like saying, which of your children do you enjoy the best? No.
We're not singling anybody
no,
out.
No, no, no.
It's just...
No, but I do think the romance novel sketch.
Fabio sort of thing.
Yes. Personally, I'm very much a dialogue person. That's my mm-hmm. strength. That's what I'm drawn to when I'm watching something. And I think that Leanne's writing on those, her sketches are so
Leanne Trace.
Tight. Yeah. What I liked about that sketch is the simplicity of it. It's two people. It's all in the dialogue. It's not really relying on any other element other than these two people interacting in a way that's so
absurd.
Can you
give like a little synopsis of what the sketch
Yeah, the
was?
Scenario was a woman being woken up by this Fabio-style romance novel character of a book she was, this giant romance novel she was reading. So he's like her fantasy. Mm-hmm. But the joke is she's in a coma because her meth lab has exploded. And he's trying to tell her within the dream she's having, but it's still this like very sensual, romantic, like, and she's talking about all the things she wants to do that she deems to be romantic, which are like mm-hmm. jet skis at, no, I can't remember any of the jokes.
That's cool.
Anyway, yeah.
At the end, Ben Bowden, is it Bowden or Bowden?
I don't know.
I've
never had to call
what?
Him by his full name because he doesn't get in trouble.
Me. Yeah. I don't think you'll hate me if I say it incorrectly, but I'm going to go with Bowden. Why not? I like that at the end he comes on as a firefighter, yeah. waking her up from
and which he had to like
coma.
Throw off the Fabio wig
right.
and put on his firefighter's helmet and come in and wake her up and then, you know, take her to safety. But yeah, it was like a 3 or 4 minute sketch. So I liked just the simplicity of it and the it was just all in the text right there. You know, there's other sketches that are also equally as funny. We opened the first show with that Gotham City like mm-hmm. city council meeting, but that one relied on that was different in that it relied on different costumes and different. It was like 8 different people, and it was basically Bruce Wayne addressing the city council about how he doesn't want all the streetlights.
Was that Josh Beard?
No, that was Justin Kaiser.
Oh yes,
yes.
My bad.
Listen, here's a
he's obsessed with Batman. That's the only reason I asked. I forgot.
When I started teaching the classes, mm-hmm. I was introduced, I think, to Ben first. Just in general, I think I was introduced to him because he had the key to let me or something. Mm-hmm. And then I met Josh and I met Justin, and I was like, which one of them is Ben? Are they all named Ben? And I was like,
there can only be one.
And I was like, that one is Ben. And then they'd be like, oh, Josh. And I was like, oh, I don't even know if Josh was in the class. I just, all these people I was meeting at this window of time. And I was like, are all these guys named Ben? And no, only one right. of them is named Ben. Anyway, it was a thing. I just like,
you're just
know.
All named Ben now. It's okay.
That's fine. I'll just, as long as somebody answers when I ask for them.
So another thing that you do is throwback cinema. So how do you decide what to show on the screen and what's the feedback been like at those events?
All right. So we started this as a secret cinema project, meaning we didn't tell people.
Like guerrilla cinema or something?
Well, just like we weren't going to tell you what movie we were showing.
Ah, yeah.
Part of that was because I think I didn't know what I was like, I don't know yet what I want to do. I just knew I wanted to show. I have, because I am a VHS collector.
Same.
So you know it stacks up quickly and then you have a lot. But I have a bunch of these like B action movies, like mm-hmm. American Samurai and like whatever, like Beatboxing Ninja. That's not a movie that I have, but I wish that I did. I don't know if it's real. I should make it. But I had all these movies and I was like, you know what? What if we just had like a, just come and we'll show these movies. So, but the first one we did, I showed the movie Maximum Overdrive, which is a movie about trucks becoming sentient and trying to attack. It's basically
not cars.
Trucks. Well, it's actually all. I think it's all mechanical. I don't know. It doesn't really have any rules. It's.
I was thinking like the Pixar movie Cars.
Yeah. Imagine Cars, but terrifying. Not at all.
So Christine.
Yeah. I mean, well, it is Stephen King. So it's actually, and it's the only movie Stephen King directed, and he admits he like did a lot of cocaine making this movie, well, and you can tell by watching.
There you go.
Anyway, so we showed that movie, and I polled the audience at the time. I said, do you want to see more like this, like kind of kind of mainstream, but a little bit weird? Or do you want more like random pulls? And people were like, we want the random stuff. So I was like, okay.
Like off the rails.
So then I pulled a movie called Excessive Force 2, Force on Force.
What?
Which is this like straight to video revenge action movie about a woman who is getting revenge on everyone.
What was it called again?
Excessive Force 2, Force on Force.
Okay.
There's a lot of forces in there three times. And the thing is I can't blame the movie for the turnout because people didn't know what the movie was. So it was kind of just a roll of the dice as who was showing up. So we did that for a few months. Mm-hmm. And I would have, sometimes I'd have three people show up. Sometimes I'd have eight people show up. I mean, it's in the black box. It's a small spot anyway. Yeah. I don't expect more than 20
upstairs
people.
Upstairs at Shenanigans Comedy Theater.
Yes, in our micro cinema space, I've decided I'm calling it.
I love that.
But anyway, this last time, I announced the movie. It was Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the 1992 movie. Mm-hmm. And we had a pretty good turnout. So I think moving forward, we're just going to announce the movies. I'm going to lean more into the lane of the kind of cheesier, but maybe slightly better known. Mm-hmm. If you want me to show kind of cheesy 90s movies, I have got stacks of them. So I'm going to go that direction, I think, for now. And then we've also been doing a more mainstream series in the main theater over the summer. We did Twister and...
Right before Twisters came.
And Independence Day and stuff.
Right,
so
right.
There's a couple other people around town who are doing similar stuff. So I put together a calendar of all the stuff that's going on around town so people could pick
up. And you work with Big Mix for that, correct?
I put them on it.
Oh, okay.
I mean, yes. I mean, I didn't mean to sound like, no. Only. No, yeah. I mean, I am connected with Big Mix on stuff.
Black Rose as well. Black Rose Records.
I've collaborated with
all I know they have like a tiny little VHS section.
Yeah.
In their store. So, yeah.
Yeah. He has, he'll pull in stuff that I'll be like, I don't know how he gets some of that. He'll post things. I'm like, yeah. I want these.
And you've done pop-ups there as well.
I've done some pop-ups before I opened my actual shop.
Congratulations, by the way. Sorry to be loud there.
No, it's very exciting. I have a little micro shop in the Clinton Row shops there in downtown. It's not much bigger than a pop-up, but I don't have to load everything in and out every time I want to do it. I've had at least one customer every day I've been open,
nice.
If not more. And I think that's a good metric for selling VHS tapes.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I have more than that. I have DVD. I'm trying to have some just movie-related stuff so people who pass through might go, oh, I could get a greeting card. Or
you even had a VCR-DVD combo on sale. That was cool.
Yeah.
I've been stalking your Instagram.
See, yeah. So you know what? I got some other stuff coming in. So I've been kind of just poking around places. Nice. And I'm trying not to, I don't know if you run into this as a collector, but there are people who really try to like maximize on the pricing. And yep. I'm like, listen, I don't want to undersell myself on something that I know is worth a little money, but I'm also not, trying to hit the low end of what something is.
What is your white whale?
I don't know because
or have you found all your white whales?
Well, I didn't really have, when I started this project, I was just like, you know what? It's cheaper to buy tapes than any other media right now. Because at the time, this was about 10 years ago.
Yeah.
So I lived
no
near,
one cared about them.
I lived near a thrift store that was doing like $4 for $1. So I was not being very discriminant at first. And I was just pulling stuff. And then through that, I would just grab stuff that I personally liked. So I actually have a bunch of other people's white whale or grail items.
Yeah.
Including, I don't know if I should brag about this or if someone's going to come for me. I have Eraserhead in the plastic on my shelf that I got thrifting for probably 50 Whoa. Cents. And I know that is one people look for. But the thing is
Amazing.
I'm a David Lynch fan.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm like, I like to look at that at home. And it's not, for those listening who are not into this, it's not like worth like 5,000. It's like maybe people pay $100 for it.
Yeah.
It's not, no one should be breaking into my home for this. I hope, please don't.
Don't come by. Don't do it.
But like I found stuff like that just is personally interesting. I actually like to lean more into like stuff people recorded at home, like just off of TV.
People's like home videos?
Well, not their like home. I mean,
oh, okay.
Those are fun if they're like, I do have a friend of mine cleared out his like shed and he gave me a bunch of stuff. Mm-hmm. And there was like, they went on a Caribbean royal cruise or something. And it was like the tape they give you at the end of the cruise. So it was, and it's like from like 1998. So the first half is just like people on the cruise doing all the goofy like cruise dances and like belly flop contests. And like, it's really fascinating. So I do archive certain stuff to my YouTube channel.
I love that. What is your YouTube channel?
KBS VHS. But no, I like stuff people have taped off of TV. Like, because they're time capsules, the commercials that are contained in there.
I love old commercials so much.
They tell you a lot about, if you really, really look at it, they'll tell you about the economy of the time. They'll tell you about kind of just what was valued. You learn a lot from all the capitalist elements of it. How much was a brand new car going for? How much were payments? How easy was credit at the time?
Yeah.
What were the news breaks? I have one that's like the O.J. Simpson trial, Tonya Harding, and one other third thing that seemed like I should have remembered it because it sounded really important, but I was like, I guess the other stuff overshadowed it. But it was like coming up on the news at 10, and I was like, whoa, this is like, okay. And then, and then I'm like just scrambling to see if the person happened to record the news. Of course they didn't. They were recording like ER or the X-Files or something. And I was like, but I love that stuff. And I am slowly but surely trying to archive those things.
Yeah. Do you collaborate with, or not collaborate, but do you contribute to any of the free Blockbusters close by? Like,
I have dropped plenty of. I haven't been over there lately. This is actually reminding me. Okay. But when I kind of get overstock on stuff and just stuff that, or just when I would just have stuff that I don't need all these, or I'll drop them off. Because I want, I think that's part of the goal behind this overall project is keeping it out of the trash.
Yeah.
Because the worst thing people can tell me when they come to my shop is they would say, we just threw away five giant trash bags of VHS. And I was like, why
though?
Because they didn't want them and there was no use for them and they figured they were useless. Mm-hmm. And I get a lot of people going, do you take donations? We have a big, and I was like, sure. And then I never see the person again. And I'm like, okay, well.
Has it been your dream to sort of have your own version of like a Blockbuster essentially? I mean, it's not a rental store, but.
Right, but it's the same vibe.
Similar concept.
I will say when Big Mix first opened.
Shout out David.
Yeah.
Shout out Ellis.
Folks who don't know, that's it's your rental store in town. And it was right when he first opened and I was like, hi. But I was like, this is the thing. This is what is the magic of walking into a space and seeing all those movies. So I am kind of like trying to recapture that to a degree. My favorite thing is people walking up into the shop, even if they don't buy anything and they just go, oh my God, I haven't thought about the movie Tommy Boy since 2004. Or remember we used to watch this.
That is a question I had too, because I mean, clearly you and I are nostalgic for that kind of thing, but there is a whole generation of people collecting tapes who did not grow up with that. Yeah. Where do you think the crossover is there?
I think part of it is on the Gen Z side, they found the old family stash in the, the attic or the basement or, and that sounds like it's like a, they didn't find a body. They found, but they found the old VCR or whatever. And it's like, they're like, oh, cool. What is this? Cause it's not their history. It's not their background on it. Like the late teens, 20 something kids. And then I think it's just fascinating cause it's tangible.
It's similar to like cassette tapes for like records, like how you can buy a $10 cassette tape for, I don't know, Sabrina Carpenter or somebody. Yeah.
Yeah, you can. I mean, because they're kind of coming back around. And I think just a VHS tape is not going to be the same as a 4K movie. But you know what? Hey, when I grew up
Things did it.
Yeah, that's true. Well, when I grew up watching Ghostbusters, it was on a tape and it was fine. And I didn't. And I think sometimes when you see these really polished versions of older movies, I'm like, that's not how it was supposed to. James Cameron just went through this whole thing. He just remastered The Abyss, I think Alien and True Lies, three of his movies, to where they're so polished, he removed all the film grain because he doesn't want it in there. And I was like,
I love the film grain.
I was like, it's like that's how the movie was supposed to look when you made it. Like it was supposed to have that because that's how you made the movie. And as the creator, you can do whatever you want. But I don't know. This isn't the movie I grew up watching. I don't like the weird polished look. I am a a vigilante when it comes to if I go to someone's house and they have the image smoothing turned on their TV, like, so it's that weird like soap opera smoothing effect. Mm-hmm. And I'll be like, can I have your remote for a second? And I'll turn it off. And they'll go, oh, I didn't even notice that that was happening. And I'm like, how do you not notice it? It looks weird.
Okay. So to close it out.
Sure.
I would like to know, KB, mm-hmm. what is one movie that you could watch over and over again and not get sick of it?
This is also hard because there's so many movies that I have absorbed into my body over time.
Same.
I will just say we just screened Buffy the Vampire Slayer. I not only watched that movie 149 times mm-hmm. in a year when I was in high school, but I also recorded it. I did this with a few movies and shows onto an audio tape mm-hmm. So I could listen to it, because an early hack for myself before I knew about all my neurodivergence was if I put something familiar on when I was going to bed, it would quiet the like ADHD part of my brain so I could mm-hmm. sleep. So I was watching that movie and I was like, I could close my eyes right now and tell you exactly what's happening, who's saying what, what's going on. That's and I hadn't awesome. Seen it in 10 or more years. It's been at least
and
that it's long.
Still vivid.
And it's just in my mind. That movie, Fried Green Tomatoes, The Cutting Edge, are all like those were definitely ones I had in that bracket.
I love Josie and the Pussycats from 2001, I think.
Yeah.
Alan Cumming.
Is it one or 2003? It's in that bracket. It's
somewhere in there.
Does it predate Mean Girls? I think it does. I think it slightly predates Mean Girls.
It does.
Yeah.
Because Mean Girls is 2004.
Yeah.
I'm getting nerdy. But
that's okay. That's why I'm here. Yeah. Josie and the Pussycats was a movie that I knew I was going to love because the soundtrack dropped before the movie,
mm-hmm. and I Letters bought that. Letters to Cleo, Kay Hanley.
And I was like, this is good. Yes. And that movie and The Blair Witch Project are two that I went in. Blair Witch Project does not have a slamming soundtrack to go with it, but they were just movies I went into going, you know what? I already know I'm going to love this movie mm-hmm. For very different reasons. but Josie, it's such a great satire. It's yes. And it's so vivid and fun. And actually, I have been considering it as a VHS night. So
I will be there 100%.
Maybe we should just do a sing along screening.
Okay. So, is there anything else that you would like to add today, KB?
Support physical media, I think, is my overall support that and support your local comedy scene. I think those are two things in an era where we are so dependent on other people's opinions. And the digital space, I personally advocate for both of those things. Go see live performance, whether it's theater or stand-up or sketch or improv, mm-hmm. And just engage on that personal one-to-one level. And then physical media, because you own it, it's on your shelf. Whatever movie you grew up watching, it'll stay the same mm-hmm. Unless you scratch it up or ruin the tape.
I love the clamshells.
They get damaged, though. They get so... But a clamshell in good condition is nice.
It's just like the specific to some things in myself.
Yeah, and it's like a nice...
Let that sound when it opens up. Anyway, that's too much information. Thank you for being here, KB.
Absolutely.
I really appreciate talking to you.
Yes, thank you for asking me.
And running out with you.
Yeah, very much.